Sermon and sit down, because I can't beat that. It's fantastic. He is risen. Oh, come on. He is risen. He is risen indeed. You'll get it. You'll get it. So it's not just not an Easter thing, right? He is still risen the week after Easter. And we celebrate that every week, so that makes me happy, because that means that he has laid it down for us once and for all, and he's not picking it back up, so that makes me happy. Let's pray. God, we love you so much. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the book of John and the many lessons that we've learned from it. Thank you for the encounters shown within, and Father, might we just learn from you. May we be washed in your word, and may we forever strive to be more like Jesus. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. This is my last week in John, well, for this series anyway. I'm so thankful that we have taken this journey through this precious gospel. It is truly one of my very favorites. Have you ever had something end? Like, I don't know, perhaps a giant project. Everything was submitted, and then on Monday, you have to ask yourself, well, now what? This is a bit of what I'm feeling as we're coming to the end of our Encounters with Jesus series. I remember feeling that way when I moved to New York to marry my wife. I moved to New York. I quit, or I left the ministry, the youth ministry that I was at in Springfield for 5 years. And I moved to New York, and I found myself sitting in the living room while Heather was at work, saying, all right, now what? I don't know if you've ever felt like that. Maybe not. Maybe you felt worse. Perhaps you've had to end a business that you've poured your life into for years. Perhaps afterward you sat there and you thought about what you had accomplished, what you had failed at, how things could have been. Maybe you tried really hard. You poured your life into a career only to, for whatever reason, you find yourself dismissed. Left to wonder, now what? Today, to close this series out, we're going to look at the last chapter of John and the interaction that Jesus has with Peter. If you want to read with me, John 21, 9 through 19. It says, when they got there, they saw that a charcoal fire was burning and fish were frying over it, and there was bread. Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net had it torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. And no one dared ask him if he really was the Lord, because they were sure of it. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to the disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know that I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. And once more he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved that Jesus had asked, questioned him a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my sheep. The truth is, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked and go where you wanted to. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will direct you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to him to let him know what kind of death he would die to glorify God. And then Jesus told him, follow me. So there's this interesting chapter, John 21. And I'll set it up for you. The stage is set in that Peter, old Peter, is sitting there in the room going, now what? What do I do now? I spent 3 years of my life following this guy around, and now he's gone. Now what? So Peter does what Peter does. I'm going fishing. It says that they went fishing all night, and they did not catch a single thing. Shut out. And they're frustrated. And they're angry. And they just can't believe that this is how it is. They thought big things were going to happen in their lives when they hooked up with this Jesus guy. And here they are alone, fishing. Going back to the old life. The guy calls from the shore, hey, you guys catch anything? I hate when people ask me that question, and it's pretty obvious that I haven't caught anything. Nope. Hey, why don't you throw your nets on the other side? Thanks, genius. Fine. It says the nets, they struggled to bring the nets in because there were so many fish. And all of a sudden, Peter gets it. I don't know what Peter's deal is about jumping in the water, but he always jumps in the water. You guys notice this? Peter just, fine, boom, he's in the water, he's swimming to shore. He's like, can't you wait for the boat? Like, what is going on? But he's impulsive, old Peter. Peter and the boys have just found their lives turned upside down. Much like the examples from earlier, they found themselves in Syracuse, New York, asking the question, now what? Okay, not Syracuse, but you get the point. So Peter does what Peter does. He knows what to do. He goes fishing. I love to go fishing. I got pretty good at coaxing bass out of Lake Springfield. When I moved to Florida all of a sudden, I was an idiot. I had no idea how to fish in the ocean. I still don't. I'm still an idiot. And I'm not very good at fishing either. But I'm not very good at ocean fishing. However, as they say, a bad day fishing is still better than a good day at work. I love to fish. It's a great way to decompress, to unwind, to take a moment, to catch my breath. When I'm in Florida, you can bet your dollar, I'll be fishing at some point, even though I'm not good at it. Peter may have been doing this for those reasons. Most likely, he is returning to his profession. You know, the pre-Jesus profession. As always, Peter is acting on the right motivation, but with the wrong judgment. We see the disciples all sitting around trying to figure out what to do next, and I can see them kind of having some ideas, but there's mostly silence. Today, this would be portrayed by people sitting around a room. The silence is so extreme that you can hear a big clock ticking. The minute hand ticking as each minute passes. And Peter hops up and says, hey, I'm going fishing. And the other disciples look at each other and shrug and go, why not? It's the best idea I've heard all day. Peter is basically thinking, I guess we get back at it. We had a good 3-year break, but let's make some money. We have our families to support. We have to get back to life. Yes, our brothers and fathers will probably have sly grins on their faces as they sadly look at us, having pity on our foolishness. The whole thing was kind of silly, kind of embarrassing, but oh well, it is what it is, right? We don't know much at what is going on right now, but there is one thing we know. We know how to do one thing right. We know how to fish. Except that night. And I can just see the disciples frustrated beyond belief. Nothing is going right for us. This guy that we followed is gone. He may be the Messiah, he may not be, we don't know. But all we know is he's disappeared. Keeps popping up every now and then, but then he disappears again. And the one thing we know how to do isn't working for us either. So it's dawn, they're shut out, they're frustrated, nothing's right in the world. And they see a figure on the shore, say, "Hey, catch anything?" And then Peter jumps in the water and starts toward the shore. It's really interesting if you look at this. This served as a reminder of another time when Jesus talked to the disciples. You guys remember? In Luke chapter 5, it's when Peter first made the decision to follow Jesus. You guys remember that? There's a handy little chart here. Luke chapter 5 versus John 21 kind of set side by side, the first experience versus the second experience. Both times follow the night of failure. And the second one, there's no exact number of fish in Luke's account, but there's 153 in the John account. And Luke 5, the nets began to break. The nets did not break in the John 21 account. And then the fourth thing was that Christ instructed from the boat, because Jesus was on another boat. And in this one, Jesus instructed from the shore. But it's just enough, right? It's just enough. It's actually pretty obvious who is on the shore, right? And Jesus did that on purpose. Jesus did it on purpose. He wanted to remind people to remember who they are. Jesus, I think, is doing something special here. He is reminding his disciples, especially Peter, about some things. Reminder number one, obviously he is reminding them of their first call to become fishers of men. Luke 5:9, "For he was awestruck by the number of fish they caught, as were the others with him. His partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. Jesus replied to Simon, 'Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be fishing for people. I will make you fishers of men.' And as soon as they landed, they left everything and followed Jesus." So the impulse of Peter, what does he do? Jumps in the water. Why? I have no clue. My dad loves, you guys, some of you guys got to meet him last week. I'm a bass guy. I like to fish for bass. I like to like move and throw my lines out and actually fish. My dad loves to catfish, which means that he sits there at dark with a lantern and waits for some catfish to come bite his bait. I don't know why he likes it. I guess it's whatever. But my dad tells a story about the first time he ever caught a big catfish. My dad had been trying. He saw that somebody caught like a 40-pound catfish out of Mattoon Lake. So he said, "I'm going to fish this lake basically every day until I catch something big." And my dad took us several times, and we got tired of fishing every day. So my dad took a friend of his, Mr. Lee, another Korean guy. So they both talked Korean to each other. I'm sure that was fun times. But anyway, so Mr. Lee and my dad are fishing. My dad looks up, and all of a sudden, pshew, his pole goes flying in the water. He's like, I got a big one. My dad, it's my dad, jumps in the water after this fishing pole. And can you believe it? He didn't find it. So my dad comes back, dripping wet, upset. And then Mr. Lee's fishing pole starts doing this crazy thing. And Mr. Lee starts to wind up. He's like, "This feels really weird. It's like, it's not a fish." And my dad's like, it's my pole. Jumps right back in the water, gets his pole, and brings in, it's like a 25-pound catfish. And my dad is like, see? Yeah. And so he tells a story, like, proud of himself. Like, yeah, I jumped in the water twice. It's like, if you would have just waited for him, whatever. Reminder number two was the location. The Sea of Galilee. It reminded Peter and his friends of many, many things. Walking on the water, calming the storm, feeding of the 5,000. And don't miss this here. Jesus has done all these miracles, and he does another one on the shore. Jesus calls out, hey, bring me some fish. But he already has a fire, fish, and bread cooking. That's a miracle. Jesus is doing something miraculous here. There's no need for anything. I got it. And I wonder if the disciples remembered the feeding of the 5,000, where Jesus took a couple fish and a couple loaves of bread, and he blessed them and made it feed thousands and thousands of people. I remember if they remember Jesus speaking into the storm and calming it. John 21:9-13. When they got there, they saw that a charcoal fire was burning and fish were frying over it, and there was bread. Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Peter, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't been torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said, and no one dared to ask him if he was really the Lord because they were sure of it. And I'm sure because of the things that I just stated. They knew who this guy was. It's really weird. It's interesting that lots of times, like when Jesus appeared to people after resurrection, at first they didn't recognize who he was. It gives us hope that there's a new body, right? That Jesus' new body is going to be like us having a new body. And I'm thankful for the day when I have a new body and I don't have the scar from surgery and all kinds of other stuff. But all of a sudden they realize who this guy is. Peter then comes ashore and he smells the charcoal and he sees the fire. Which gives us reminder number three. Peter is reminded of the night of his ultimate failure. Remember the two passages that bring us to this point. In chapter 13, Peter insists loudly and emphatically that he at least will remain loyal to Jesus. He's not going to let him down. He wants to follow him before wherever he goes, to prison, to death, wherever. In fact, he is prepared to lay down his own life on Jesus' behalf. If you look at chapter 13, 36 and 37. And then John 18:17, the woman asked Peter, you're not one of the man's disciples, are you? No, he said, I am not. Because it was cold, the household servants and the guards had made a charcoal fire. They stood around it, warming themselves, and Peter stood with them, warming himself. Meanwhile, picking up in verse 25, as Simon Peter was standing by the fire, warming himself, they asked him again, you're not one of his disciples, are you? He denied it, saying, no, I am not. But one of the household slaves of the high priest, the relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, said, didn't I see you out there in the olive grove with Jesus? And again, Peter denied it. Immediately, a rooster crowed. That smell, the charcoal smell. Such a reminder of things, right? I know we can all remember things like bonfires, and there's that smell. The smell of a campfire reminds me of camping with my parents. And there's some other smells that maybe remind you of some other things. maybe not so good things. And Peter smells the charcoal. And I think that John points this out on purpose. He remembers that night and he's ashamed. So Jesus feeds his disciples. Probably the best breakfast ever. You remember the wine, right? The best wine ever. I'm assuming it's probably a pretty good breakfast if Jesus made it. Jesus is feeding his sheep. He is modeling to Peter what it is that he is about to call him to do. John 21, 15 through 19. After breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied, "you know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said, "you know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep," Jesus said. Once more he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was grieved that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep." The truth is, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked and go wherever you wanted to. But when you're old, you will stretch your hands out and others will direct you where to take you. And they will take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know what kind of death he would die to glorify God. And then Jesus told him, "Follow me." So in the next scene, we see Jesus taking Peter for a little stroll. Disobedience always has to be dealt with. Jesus takes Peter aside. Just like Jesus does, however, Jesus first blesses Peter and the other disciples. He blesses them, he feeds them, he takes care of their physical needs, and then he pulls him aside and says, "Hey, now let's talk about your spiritual stuff." Then he deals with them. He deals with him. That is our example too. If we want to be able to speak into people's lives, to make a difference in people's lives, to share Jesus with people, we have to first show them that we love them and care for them. If there's a physical need that needs to be taken care of, before we preach to them, we have to meet that need. Right? It's a model Jesus gave us. So we get this exchange here. We get this wrong so often, but we see this exchange. Some commentators believe that John is saying something with his language here. Others don't. I happen to agree with those first commentators that believe that Jesus asked the question, "John, do you love me?" And I know that you guys have probably heard this before, but there's three types of love. I know I've said that before. In biblical love, there's eros love, which is like a romantic man-woman, that kind of love, you know what I mean? And then there's phileos love, which is brotherly love, where we get Philadelphia from. And then there's agape love, which is love that's self-sacrificing, that will do anything because God showed us what that love was like by sending Jesus for us, right? So we have Jesus say, "Peter, do you agape me? Do you love me like I love, like my Father loves?" Peter replies, "Yes, Lord, I phileos you, love you. I love you like a brother, Jesus." And then Jesus again says, "Whoa, do you love me like God, like a God, like your God?" And Peter says, "Lord, you know everything. You know how much I love you like a brother." And then the last time Jesus says, "Peter, do you phileos me? Do you even love me like a brother?" I can see Peter blinking back tears and saying, "You know I love you. You know I love you." See, disobedience has to be dealt with. And it's not always easy or nice. It's loving, but but it's hard. Jesus had to say to Peter, "Do you love me?" The three times, because it was the three times that Peter denied him publicly. And three questions would correspond to Peter's three denials, three for completeness, yes, but three also for the reminder. The smell of charcoal fire lingers, Peter's night of agony, and Jesus' own night of agony returns. But because of the latter, the former can be dealt with. Jesus is the Passover lamb who takes away the sin of the world, Peter's sin included, your sin, my sin. So Jesus goes to where the pain is, as he so often does. He takes Simon Peter away from the others. We see in verse 20, the beloved disciples following them at a different distance. And they're probably walking slowly along the shore, and he asks the question that goes to the heart of it all, "Do you love me?" The issue was Peter's love for Christ. If a man really loves Christ, his life will be devoted and dedicated. Don't miss this, though. Jesus, each time, gives Peter a new mission. Three times he asks a question, and three times Jesus gives Peter a new mission. Note that Christ gives Peter a new commission. He is now a shepherd, besides being a fisher of men. He is now to shepherd the lambs and the sheep and feed them the word of God. All Christians are expected to be fishers of men, soul winners, but some have been called into the special ministry of shepherding the flock. What good is it to win the lost if there is no church where they might be fed and cared for? Not only is this a fresh commission, not only is this Jesus trusting Peter to get back to the fruitful work and to turn his undoubted wobbly love for Jesus to good account, it is more. Jesus is sharing his own work, his own ministry with Peter. It is, after all, Jesus who is the good shepherd, right? We saw in chapter 10. It is Jesus who has the task of leading and feeding his sheep and lambs, guiding them to and from pasture, keeping safe from predators. He knows them and they know him. He has now given his life for them. But the commission of 2021 was, John 2021, was quite specific. As the Father sent me, so I am sending you. There's no getting away from it. And this is what it means. Peter is to share Jesus' task of shepherding. And here is the secret of all Christian ministry. Yours and mine, lay, ordained, full-time or part-time. It's a secret of everything from being a quiet back-row member of a prayer group to being a platform speaker at huge rallies and conferences. If you are going to do any single solitary thing as a follower and servant of Jesus, that is what it's built on. Somewhere deep down inside, there is a love for Jesus. And though, you, goodness knows, you've let him down enough, he wants to find you. He wants to love you. He wants to give you a chance to express your love and to heal the hurts and failures of your past and give you a new work to do. These are not things you do to earn forgiveness. Nothing can ever do that. It is grace from start to finish. They are things to do out of joy and relief that you are already forgiven. Things we are given to do precisely as the sign that we are forgiven. Things that will be costly because Jesus' own work was totally costly. Things that will mean following Jesus into suffering, perhaps even into death. Peter went from strength to strength. He was still muddled up time to time. But he became a shepherd. He loved Jesus and looked after his sheep. No one could ask for more. Jesus never asks for less. Anybody know what this term shepherd translates to today? Anybody got an idea? Elder. And we have six here, Bowen. Six men that I've gotten to know over the last few months. Men that I know take seriously their role of being a shepherd. Do me a favor, pull out your bulletins. See the prayer list? I want you to take a pen out. I want you to add these names. Aaron Thompson. John Eilers. Paul Henry. Charlie Bolton. Steve Peterson. And Tim Kerr. These men are all busy, busy people. And yet they love the church. And they love you guys. They love this church. And the promise of taking this role of elder, what's the promise? They will be attacked. That's great. Sign me up. Will you commit to praying for our leaders this week? Will you not like, yeah, we will. No. Will you seriously pray for our elders this week? We got six, so that's, you can miss one day. Pray for one elder every day. How about you today? Is your love for Jesus the root of it all? Growth is loving your neighbor. Some of us have been doing this Jesus thing for a long time. Some of us need to get in the business of shepherding. So what's that look like? Well, we have an example of the great shepherd. We do what Jesus did. And if you can't figure that out, look at the six men whose names you just wrote down. Mimic them. Because they sacrifice over and over and over again for you. And for me. I'm going to do something a little bit different today. If you're an elder, we ask that you stand up and come forward. Come on. I know who you are. These men have taken seriously the call of Peter, that's to feed Jesus' sheep. So we're going to pray for him today. We're going to pray. I know that things are crazy. Lives are attacked. When you step into the role of elder, your life gets crazy. And it gets crazy not only because you're dealing with church stuff, but because Satan's throwing everything he can at you and your family. I know Aaron has been beat up lately. Aaron and Patty. Just with deaths and just over and over and over again. It's no joke. Same.